he responded to our high and precious highest sorrow. The different pieces in the Arachai that I wanted to look at tonight vary very widely one from another in terms of their style. And, you know, when you take them together, you really, you know, you appreciate how the Arachayim was able to relate to Chumash in so many different ways. We're going to see a little bit of Drush. We're going to see something which is almost like a Chassidish Pshat in Pesach, like a Remez, you know, where the Pesach is taken entirely out of its context, you know, to teach a lesson which is certainly not in the Pashto Pshat of the Chumash. And we're also going to see Halacha, where the Arachai makes use of halachic analysis in terms of understanding the Pesach in very, very different ways. Of understanding the psukkah, but again, kulam nidnu mirela echa, they ultimately all, you know, come from the Ribbono Shel Olam, all these different ways of looking at the Chumash, and the Arachai had this mastery where he was able to, you know, to teach Torah in so many different ways. So I wanted to start with the very first Arachayim, on the, you know, in the, on the bottom of page Kuf Tet Zayin, very beginning of Parshas Chayisara. So Ayiyu Chayisara, of course, the passage starts off, and Vayiyu Chayi Sarah, it was the life of Sarah, Me'a Shana, 100 years, Re'etzer Shana, and 20 years, V'shev HaShanim, and 7 years, Shnei Chayi Sarah. These were the years of the life of Sarah. So if the Chayi Sarah would ask, Lama Omar Vayiyu, V'lo Omar Keseder HaOmer B'cholat Tzadikim, Vayichi Adam, Vayichi Shem, O Yomar Eile Shnei, right? The Arachayim points out that, you know, the way in which the Torah describes the lifespan of Sarah is stylistically different to the way in which the Torah describes the lifespan of other tzaddikim. So you have one format, Vayechi so-and-so lived, right? Adam, Shem are described in that way. Or by Avraham Avinu, it says, Eila Shnei Chayei Avraham. These are the years of the life of Avraham. Why by Yidiyu Chayei Sarah? In other words, why is the style different over here? So, Achei Yisboer, Averak Omram Zal, Shesidas Nisar Sahari Kisha Hodi'ua, Akedat Yitzchak, Vikim Ashala Nishchak, Parma Nishmasa. Right? So, says the Arachayim, hinted in this pasuk is the famous statement from Chazal, he quotes the Tanchuma, Rashi, of course, quotes it as well, right, that what prompted, what brought about the death of Sarah, right, so in the words of Rashi, the Nisma Chamisa Tzara Lakedah Yitzchak, that Sarah died immediately after the story of the Akedah. Why? Because the word came to her. When the news of the Akedah made its way to Sarah Imenu, and she heard that Yitzchak was that close to death, and she was so shocked by the event that had almost taken place, it was such a startling event, she basically dropped dead on the spot. That's, you know, the Tanchuma tells us, and Rashi quotes that that's why the Akedah is followed up by the death of Sarah immediately. So says the Arachayim, where did Chazal get that from? So, again, you know, on one level, they got it from the Smichas HaParshios, you know, the fact that the Akedah is recorded, and then immediately thereafter, Sarah's death is destroyed. But in truth, if you think about it, and I guess this is what the Arachayim is reacting to, it's really not such a compelling proof that one caused the other. Right? In other words, you know, the Akedah happened, and it doesn't say, like we oftentimes find in Chumash, where two events happened in close proximity to one another, we find the words Achar Advarim Ha'ela, after this, so immediately after X came Y. We don't find that here in Chayisara. Who's to say that the Akedah happened, you know, right before the death of Sarah? Maybe the Akedah happened. Years went by, then Sarah died. How does Chazal come to this idea that the Akedah happened immediately before the death of Sarah, and that the Akedah was the cause of the death of Sarah? The Arachayim suggests that that's to be found in the word Vayihiyu. Ukefizeh, as he continues at the top of page Kuf Yisrayim, Misat Sara Haifa Misat Shmuat Yitzchak, Hu Shiromaz Ve'omro Vayihiyu, Loshen Sar Shiromaz El Ha'omor. Chazal tell us that whenever you have the phrase Vayihi, Gemara Megillah, whenever you have this term Vayihi, Vayehi implies that there's some sad, that there's some anguish or pain associated with that event. Vehaya, say Chazal, is the lashon of simcha. Vayehi is the lashon of sad. Chazal seems to be dashing it from the fact that the opening syllable, vay, you know, is woe or anguish in Hebrew. So Vayehiyu chaye sara, says the Arachayim, reading between the lines, carries the connotation, Sarah's death was a death that was associated with anguish. Vayehiyu chaye sara. At the end of Sarah's life, it went out with the Vayehiyu. She died in pain. She died in suffering. She died in anguish. So where did that pain, suffering, and anguish come from? So says the Arachayim, that's what prompted Chazal to make this drasha, that the Akedah was the Goren, that that's what brought about the death of Sarah.
So that fits in a little way with the Benish Chaisers. What's Benish Chaisers? His wife, did she die? Yeah. He was also Akedah. Because my place is alive, she can do the other, the other, the other is a chef.
Right.
Now that he took his life away, he's cutting his backless,
sure.
So that's what Sarah was about. He healed. That's how it was because he can't do anymore.
That Yitzchak, had he died, would have lost the ability to do mitzvahs.
Right? Right. That's what the Benishchai says.
Right. Interesting. Interesting. Well, if you're talking, the Archaim is going to address this on a theological level.
So that in the future. You want to know that the Arcade caused the, what they were very close proximity to one after the other.
Right. Interesting. That's the first rush that he makes. Oh, yes, so we'll see Ma'amarim Zal Hanista. Shemei Faidei Habasura Raza. Yagid Shimlo Hayama Ara Od Lochayim. Right? So, furthermore, the Chazal want to convey over here that if, again, according to Chazal, that she died because of the news of the Akedah, obviously had the Akedah not happened, right, had that story not happened, she would still be alive. So, who Oru Vayihiyu Pirush? Havaya Chadosha Meshune Tzmei HaKitzpa Shekitzpat Yomeha Yotzer Heim V'alidei Maisa HaNitzkar Hoyu Chayeho Tzach HaOmer Bo Inyam. Right, says the Arachayim, the term Vayihiyu Chayesoro implies that they ended suddenly. Not as we have by Vayichi Odom. Vayichi Odom implies he lived however long he lived, 930 years. And that was the amount of time that was allotted him, and then he died. Right? For Eilesh Nei Chaye Avram, these are the years of the life of Avram, again, implies that he died a natural death. Vayiyu Chaye Sara implies, says the Arachayim, and they were, and the years of Sara were, implies kind of that they came to an abrupt stop. That really, in a sense, the lifespan of Sara was supposed to be longer, but this event cut her life short. She died young. I mean, 127 is not so young, right? But she died before her time, so to speak. Her life was artificially cut short because of this incident with the Akedah. Now, that truth to tell raises a theological question. That's what he's going to talk about in the next paragraph, right? Namely, so what was Sarah's lifespan supposed to be? So let's say for argument's sake she died at 127. Let's say for argument's sake she was really slated to live for 150 years. I'm making up the number, right? She was slated to live for 150 years. But the shock of the Akedah cut her life prematurely short. Is that fair? Is that right? You know, it seems somehow wrong. You know, that Sarah's life should have been cut artificially short. Really, I thought HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have had her live more years. But because of the shock of the story of the Akedah, her life was cut short prematurely. That's implied in Vayihiyu. So, you know, right now the Arachayim just states that as a fact, but I mean, it raises the theological question. How could that be if she was meant to live for a certain number of years? How could it be that Hashem brought about the shortening of her lifespan? So here the Arachayim in the next paragraph addresses this, and he states a very fascinating theological idea. So, Omro Od, Shnei Chayei Sara, right? The Arachayim addresses another oddity in the pasuk. Right? It says Vayihiyu Chaye Sara. Yeah, the years of Sara were 100 years and 20 years and 7 years. Right? She was 127 years old. And then the last phrase in the pasuk is Shnei Chaye Sara. These are the years of the life of Sara. And of course, that latter part of the pasuk is seemingly extraneous. Well, what do those three last words add that weren't contained in the earlier part of the pasuk? The point of the pasuk is to tell us that she lived 127 years. Good. So you could have done that by saying, "Vayu Hayisara Me'ashana V'Yasrushana V'Shevashana." First pasuk, right? That's the end. Why do you have to say Sheikh Hayisara? Why come back and say afterwards, at the end of the pasuk, these are the years of the life of Sarah? So says the Arachayim, you can understand that based on the yisod that I told you a moment ago, that Vayidiyu implies there was a certain suddenness to her death, and in a sense, she died before her time. So we have the obvious question then. Again, just back in the Arachayim. So Yagir HaKatzul Be'omar Shnei Chayi Perish Shomar Shnei Chayi HaShikatzulah Ela Shehoyo Zeh Sibo Shemeso Al Yoda Ulamashi Tirashi Shal Yidei Sibo Kabitzura Olu Lo Chayi HaTochot Mimashahoyu Yichavim Lohodiya Mishpat HaChesed Asher Yishvor HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lididov Ki Kol Tzadik Shlo Yishim Yomov Lusibo Yidua Lo Yigra Hashem Mitzadik Mashahoyo Marviach Ilu Chai Shonov Shleimim V'yashlim Lo Tzcharo Al Hashonim Shlo Po'al Bohem Dova Ki Yomar Elov Ilu Hoyitzi Chai Tavotzi Hoyitzo V'tzagil Dova Tov. He says, again, unbelievable yisod, an unbelievable idea in Hashkafa. Then we are Chai. When a tzadik or a tzadikus dies prematurely, in a sense, that tzaddik or tzaddikus can come to the Rebbe Shalom with a taina. Namely, I was supposed to live for 150 years, let's say. I died prematurely at 127 because of this accident, quote unquote, you know, this shock that I received after hearing the, you know, the news about the akedah. There were 23 years that I was really supposed to live, where I could have been doing so many mitzvahs and nights and thousands during those 23 years. So, Rebbe Shalom, in a sense, you owe me, you know? I mean, forget about the 23 years I could have gone on vacations and gone here and gone there and, you know, seen the world, seen the Alps, you know, run around here, run around there. Okay, forget about that. I might have gone on all the vacations I could have taken during those 23 years. But those were 23 years of doing mitzvahs, which I could have performed. And here, through this tragic accident, those years were cut short. The Rebbe Shalom, what about all the reward that I could have gotten for those 23 years? He said, the Rebbe Shalom says back to that tzaddik, you're right. You may have only lived 127 years, but I'll advance you, so to speak, to the time that presumably you would have attained during those living 23 years when you died prematurely. Now you'll ask me, how on earth can one, you know, what 23 years worth of mitzvahs would have contained? I mean, by definition, I mean, you know, a person has free choice, has free will. You know, we don't know what Sarah would have done during those 23 years. I think the answer to the question is, you're right. How on earth we couldn't have determined that? But one of the advantages of being God is, you know, you're able to figure out things that a human being can't, right? So, however, the Rebbe Shlomo makes the question as to, you know, what mitzvahs Sarah would have done during those missing 23 years, he credits it to her account. Her premature death doesn't detract from her spiritual accomplishments, even though her life was cut short. So Zotach the Arachayim, so who omro shnei chayei Sarah, kivein el hasha'or, meaning, the way to read the pasuk is as follows, says the Arachayim. Vayihiyu chayei Sarah nezek. Vayihiyu, the Arachayim is understanding kind of in the sense of nezek. Unfortunately, the actual years that Sarah lived were only 127 years. But shnei chayei Sarah, from a celestial perspective, she's reckoned as if she had her full length of life, i.e., let's call it for arbitrary purposes, 150 years. She gets the reward as if she lived those years and accomplished everything she was able to accomplish. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't cut off her tzar after the 127 years. Now, I will freely admit to you, I have no idea. Like we've discussed before in the Arachayim, there's certain ideas the Arachayim puts out there, and I can say the words, but to really understand the mechanics of how this works, certainly is beyond me. I'm not saying it's not understandable, but it's certainly beyond me. How can HaKadosh Baruch Hu provide schar for mitzvahs which were never actually done, mitzvahs which we reckon Sarah would have done during those missing 23 years, but never were actually performed, and yet she's receiving the reward as if, in other words, she shouldn't feel bad that her life prematurely would cut short, that it's as if she lived the 150 years from God's perspective. How does God make that cheshbon again? I can't really explain that. But you see two very interesting things from this Aruch Chaim, and I think the conventional wisdom, this certainly runs against the conventional wisdom. Number one, the conventional wisdom analyzing the story of Sarah and her sudden death, when people came to be Menachem Avil Avram, no doubt, had they been somewhat insensitive, they would have said, look, the Rabbana Shalom Tiz Devel. They would have said something along those lines. I don't know if they would have said it in Yiddish, but they would have conveyed something along those lines. Meaning, yes, it was a shock. Yes, it was sudden. Yes, it was unexpected. But clearly, this was part of God's plan. Clearly, God had in mind that Sarah Yemena would die at the age of 127 after hearing the terrible news of that Yitzchak's near slaughter by the Akedah. Yeah, kind of seems to be saying pretty clearly that that's not a correct perspective. Right? In other words, this was really a quote-unquote accident. This was really not the plan. Right? Really, God's plan was that she should live for 150 years. Again, that was, God's plan. God obviously knew it was going to happen. Right? But the plan, the official plan, she was going to live for 150 years. And this kind of just happened. Right? In other words, really, her lifespan was supposed to be longer. It's not wrong to say such a thing, according to the Aruch Chaim. This really was a quote-unquote tragic accident. Right? Number two, right? When people, it's a tremendous comfort when Rahmanu Litzlan, good people die young. Because, essentially, there's a lot of nechama in this Aruch Chaim. Unfortunately, we know through life, how often do we see somebody who is a wonderful person, a tzaddik, somebody's doing chesed, mice and toes, and all kinds of good things, and as if they die young. And there's a sort of sense that we intuitively feel that, wow, that was a waste. Isn't it tragic oftentimes in life? Again, every person's precious, obviously, but somehow it sometimes seems like the guy who doesn't really do all that much and is ornery and difficult and cranky, he lives, a very, very long life. And the person who's, doing and accomplishing and about chesed and, a person of mitzvahs and nights and toes, and never say they seem to die before their time. As an expression, the good die young, right? So sometimes, it's not always true, but sometimes you look out in the world, and that's a puzzling and frustrating kind of thought. So here, essentially, the good die young. Sorry, you may be dying. She's not so young. She's 127. But relatively speaking, she's dying before her time. But the Aruch Chaim is saying, you should know there's a nechama in here, because from God's perspective, she's reckoned as if she accomplished all of those things that she would have accomplished had she made it to the age that she was slated to actually pass away at. Right? So it would seem that one could apply this idea in contemporary terms as well. A person never dies, 35, Rahmanu Litzlan. Right? So we have the right, apparently, to say, look, in Shamayim, they look at that person as if they died at a ripe old age, and God calculates what that person would have accomplished over that period of time, and that person is rewarded accordingly up in Shamayim. A child passes away. Right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at that child when that child comes to Shamayim as if they lived the full life, and based on where they were holding when they passed away, what they presumably would have accomplished had they made it to an older age. Again, how God reconciles that, I have no idea. Right? But you see, there's such a concept which the Aruch Chaim is suggesting over here. Right, so the question is, why don't we say, just repeating for the audience, I was told that the audience actually appreciates it, so I'll just mention it. Why don't we say that in 127 years she was so accomplished that she got into those 127 years what the average person would have been able to do in 150 years, right? Well, what she could have done in 150 years. So you're 100% right. That would be a beautiful explanation, and that would certainly reflect the quote-unquote conventional wisdom, but I don't think that's at all what the Aruch Chaim is saying. But the archivist, and if you said, what would you say? I don't think that's so radical. People out there, you know, will express those kind of sentiments. But the archivist is saying something much more radical than that. I mean, something really quite shocking, namely, yeah, that you get extra credit, you know, for the parts of the test that you missed. Right? So if, you missed the test, and I thought, well, I'm going to give you 100. Right? So, again, it's a startling concept, but one which I think, you know, provides a great deal of nechama to people never who have family members, friends, and the like, you know, who seem to pass away before their time.
Is there a connection between this concept and the death of the
father? So, the question is there a connection between this concept and the notion that the Misas Tzadikim Mechaperes, that when a Tzadik passes away, it serves as a kapara for the people around them. Mm-hmm. How would you explain the connection?
Well, maybe in addition to getting the Hashem giving the credit to the Tzadik for removing that Tzadik from the world, part of that credit devolves to those people that remain.
So Jonathan wants to suggest that, again, let's do it mathematically over here, right? So they're 23 unaccounted years, you know, 23 years that Sarah could have lived but didn't live. So there's a certain merit which is kind of just attributed, ascribed to her, right? Even though she didn't actually do anything over those 23 years. So perhaps that imaginary merit is distributed over the rest of the people who are the survivors. And that's the source of the notion that Mifus Tzadik and Mechaperes.
Because that time that Hashem foreshortened would have been the time that the Tzadik used as an example for those that remain.
Right. Right. I did not think of that at all. I think that's a beautiful pshat. Again, namely just to mention the pshat from Jonathan Siegel, Halevi, in the back of the shir over here. But if you want, you can request to be anonymous, I guess. But, you know. It's not donations, it's Torah, so you're allowed to make yourself known. Maybe Gula Lola, right? So Jonathan wants to suggest that maybe this is the basis of the idea that Mitzvah Tzadik and Mechaperes. Why should the death of Tzadik bring about a kapara? So God basically said, look, this person, had they lived, would have been doing all kinds of wonderful things for the next 23 years. She may get her reward up in Shemayim, but the people left behind are denied all of those Meisim Tovim because the person was taken away from them. So as a kind of, I guess, consolation prize, I don't know what you want to call it exactly, but the Ribbono Shel Olam basically says, look, let me distribute those 23 years worth of avodah now, you know, and their payros in terms of the Meisim Tovim and the Mishnas. Let me distribute them among, you know, those who are left behind, because why should they lose out because the Tzadik was taken away? I think the one thing you would have to add to make it work, I don't think the Arachayim is saying this automatically, that every Tzadik who dies has this kind of surplus of years that are accredited to them. But specifically, someone like Sara Imenu, who seems to have died before her time, there's this concept of the surplus years. You know, if, let's say, Avraham Avinu, who seems to have died in time, I mean, whatever dying in time is exactly, but someone like an Avraham Avinu, who seems to have died in time, you know, for his, you know, I don't know that the Archai would say such a similar concept, that there are these surplus years, which are, you know, which are then kind of accredited to them. No, he died in the right time, you know, so that the concept doesn't necessarily apply. Yes.
The concept of reward or svar or accumulating something for doing mitzvos, is it like linear accumulation that you know, or time teaching us that maybe there's a qualitative nature that, like someone like Sara and Manu, she was up to some degree that the sorrow she was receiving was not something that she could only add to. She couldn't, you know, another year, another year, another year. In other words, she maxed out.
Right, so Mari wants to suggest that, you know, maybe by the end of 127 years, she had basically qualitatively accomplished everything that she could. Obviously, you can never say somebody quantitatively accomplishes everything they could, because there's always another little old lady to help across the street or something like that. There's always, one more chesed to do. But maybe qualitatively she had reached a certain level and sort of maxed out over there. Again, I think in the pasuk perhaps it's an interesting suggestion, but I think the Aruch Chaim himself is really saying this really startling idea, very, shocking idea even, that, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving Sarah reward for years that she didn't actually live, right? In other words, he's giving her a reward for the, 23 years where she was not in existence. He's kind of trying to figure out, had she been alive, this is what she would have done and what she would have accomplished. I got a fascinating idea.
I'm thinking of a graph. I'm not sure I'm right, but you go up, and then you pass in the graph plateaus. Because I'm uncomfortable with the concept that you can always get more stars for every. Maybe I'm wrong. Is it a quid pro quo? Is it one for one? You do a bit to get started. Do a bit to get started. Or is there something qualitative about it?
Yeah, I think it's both. I mean, there's a quantitative element.
Right.
The qualitative element. I think there's a quantitative element also, meaning, the more little old ladies you help across the street, the more star you're going to get, I don't think it has to be necessarily more complicated than that. There's a certain linear quality to it. So I wanted to take a look. That's one Aruch Chaim. Again, beautiful, typical Aruch Chaim, where to some extent this is pshat, right? In other words, he's dashing, he's explaining the word vayihiyu, why the Torah stylistically chooses that word as opposed to other common expressions. I wouldn't say it's Pashat Pshat. Certainly he's taking a Medrash of Chazal and seeing where Chazal got that Medrash out of the word itself. Plus, he's really developing a very interesting Hashkafic idea, which again is fascinating in its own right. Well, this piece I think is kind of typical of some of the Aruch Chaims we've seen before. The next piece, which I want to look at, is atypical of some of the pieces we've seen before, and like I said, it's almost like a Chassidish Averitol. It's the sort of thing that you could imagine somebody, I read the saying by Shaul Shudas, right, which is perhaps why the Chassidim, as we mentioned in the past, we're so enamored of the style of the Aruch Chaim. So on page Kuf Yitzayim, again, just the facing page and base, Fatamat Sarah. Right, the Pasuk says, Fatamat Sarah, Bekir Yitzayim, he Echadro Be'eretz Kenan. On the surface, that's a pretty easy public to translate. Sarah died in Kiryat Arba, right? That's the name of a city. He, Hebron, that is the same city as Hebron. Hebron and Kiryat Arba are two names for the same city. There is Kenan, right? And that's the place. And Hebron, Kiryat Arba, is to be found in the land of, in the land of Kenan. Simple enough. But said the Aruch Chaim, there's a deeper way to read the pasuk, which I wouldn't call drash. I would call this remes, what he's about to do over here. Atamas Sarah, Rama Takasu Be'Omu V'Kiryas Arba, Lama Kishas V'Shalom O Yitzyakes Hamisol HaTzadikim, Ela Shekiryas Arba, Pirush, Ir, Shehoitzo Benuyo Midal Yisodos, Nifr Dohi V'Nosso Misham. I said the Aruch Chaim, Kiryas Arba, of course, obviously, on a simple level, it's the name of a city. The Kiryat Arba on Eretz Yisrael today. But Kiryat Arba is a homiletical reference to the body. Kiryat Arba means the city of the four. What are the four? The body is made up of the four yisodos, the four basic elements, which we know in medieval thought, all of physicality was made. They didn't have a periodic table like we have today. All of physicality was made up of four basic building blocks of creation. So all the body is the Kiryat Arba. Right? Kiryat Arba refers to Tzara's body. It doesn't refer to the city. So says the Aruch Chaim, when we talk about Tzara dying, she didn't really die. To die means to be annihilated and to be totally, lost to existence. Tzadikim don't die. Chazal tell us tzadikim are filu b'misafun kruyim chayim. Tzadikim are called alive even when they physically die. Sarah didn't die. She just separated herself from Kiryat Arba, from the body, which is the physical repository of the four different elements. So Omrohi Hebron, that when the Pasuk says that Kiryat Arba is Hebron, it's also to be interpreted homiletically. Pirush, Shagam Shemesa, he mashpat for him, Duchina Sachibur. Ki at Sadikim Agam Shiyamutsu, Haguf Eil Mushmol Mehachayim. Ki Sadikim the Misotsum Kulim Chayim. Say you will mount the Maitre de Rabahai Bar Yoshia. Right? The word Hebron is from the word Chibur, connection. And when Sarah died, although she had left her physical body, she was still in her disembodied state, still attached to this world, in the sense that Tzadikim never truly died. Tzadikim live on, even after their physical death. So the chibur, the connection, is still there. Satam, why is that? A tzaddik's role in this world is to take their physicality and through Torah and Mitzvot and Ma'asim Tovim to convert that physicality into spirituality. Even during a tzaddik's lifetime, the tzaddik is taking their physical body and making it much more spiritual. By way of example, the Ram writes in his drashas that when we see tzaddikim suffering terribly, you know, the Chazal and the Marbrachos refer to that oftentimes as Yisurim Shel Ahava, you know, that God afflicts the tzaddikim with afflictions of love. What are afflictions of love? If you love somebody, usually don't spank them, right? I mean, that's a little twisted, right? So what does Yisurim Shel Ahava mean? So Rav writes, look, a tzaddik's role in this world is to convert his body into spirituality. You know, and that Moshe Rabbeinu was the pinnacle of all of that. Moshe Rabbeinu, how was he able to go without eating or drinking in Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights? Well, because essentially Moshe Rabbeinu had taken his physical body and made it something spiritual. Again, hard for us to grasp. But he was really a spiritual being such that he glowed. He literally glowed. I mean, that's, you know, the Torah tells us. He comes down from Har Sinai. He's glowing because the neshama is like shining through. His body has become, you know, much less physical. It's almost like spiritual. So the Rav writes, what's Yisurim Shel Ahava? When God afflicts the tzaddik, the body wastes away. And as the body wastes away, in a sense, the tzaddik is actually becoming everything that he hoped to become in life, a spiritual being. As the body wastes away, his spirituality becomes predominant. That's Yisurim Shel Ahava. That's why God loves. I mean, why just smack somebody out of love? No. The Yisurim allow the tzaddik to become a spiritual being. You know, the physicality is worn away and the spirituality, you know, kind of shines through. It's almost like, you know, like a threadbare shirt, you know, where you can look at the shirt. I have one or two of these at home. Eventually I think my wife is going to throw them out. But, you know, you kind of look at the shirt and, you know, the shirt is so threadbare you can actually see through to the, you know, to the skin. So as the tzaddik wastes away, the neshama, you know, shines forth. So that's, you know, throughout the tzaddik's life, the tzaddik is doing that. So when the tzaddik finally passes away, you know, when, you know, the body is physically removed, there's still a chevron, there's still a chibur, a connection between the tzaddik and this world. Right, so basically, I think that's what he's saying with the idea of chibur, namely, that when a tzaddik really reaches a certain madrega, the body itself is so purified, the body has stopped being a physical repository, and the body itself achieves a certain level of spirituality. That's why the body doesn't decompose. There's great stories about, you know, the tzaddikim, they dug them up 200, 300, 400 years later, the body was still intact because the body had become ruchni. Like, Moshe Rabbeinu had a body, but his body was a double ruchni, you know, it was a spiritual thing. Hence, he was able to go without eating and drinking for such a long period of time. I guess it can work in two different ways. Meaning the Rav is saying that as the body wastes away, the spirituality comes down. Right? But you know, what the tzaddik ultimately does is not just to destroy the physicality, the tzaddik transforms the physicality into spirituality, and hence the body, you know, has the ability to last on, you know, in the case of the tzaddik, even after the tzaddik dies. Right? Right, you find that when a person, this is the line which is relevant to us, Shiva himself, Dvekus Ha'adam Bekoma, when a person clings to his creator, his Hakua, Yisod of Kulam, Yisod Ha'esh, so then every, you know, of the four elements in the body, they all become the Yisodas Eish, they become the basic foundation block of fire, right? They become the elements of fire. Fire of all the four Yisodas is considered to be the most spiritual. The Yisod HaEish, the Yisod Eish HaNeshama. And as he converts the various Yisodas, the various elements in his body into the element of fire, ultimately the element of fire becomes the element of the Neshama itself, i.e., again, you know, leaving out all the discussion about the four elements, again, which, you know, if you try to write that on a chemistry test nowadays, they're going to give you a hard time, right? But basically what the Yilar Chaim is saying is that through Tzara, this is my consultant, the tzaddik is able to transform his very body into something spiritual. He Hevra, that's the Chibur, the connection, which is hinted at here in the Pasuk. And finally, the Omer the Eretz Canaan, when it says that Tzara died in Eretz Canaan, why tell us that? Because this world is Eretz Canaan. Canaan is not just a country, you know, which is now called Israel, right? Canaan is a homiletical reference to this world, to the Olam Hazeh, who Yetzer Hara, right? Who the Emso Disamtuso Kinegdo. And when a person struggles against the Yetzer Hara, against Kina'an, Yafsig Ha'odam La'afli La'afos Bidusha Ba'atzoga. A person, by struggling against Kina'an, is able to accomplish incredible things in life in Kedusha. So, just to read the Pasuk, as per the Arachayim, it goes as follows. Vatama Sarah. Sarah died. But what does it mean that she died? She didn't fully die. She died Bekiryas Arba. Her body stopped being a physical repository for her neshama. True. But he has room. But even after death, quote unquote, as the tzaddikim, she's still alive. Her neshama is still there and still is connected to her body, her physical body in some way, right? Because during her lifetime, she transformed in part her physical body into something spiritual. The Eretz Canaan, and how did she do that? By virtue of struggling against the Yetzer Hara, you know, which is called Canaan. Now, is that Pasuk Pshat in the Pasuk? No, not by a long means, right? It's Remes. I don't think it's even Drash. I mean, Drash, usually there's some, you know, connection to the Pshat in some way or another. This is pure Remes. In other words, this is a Hashkafa, which the Arachayim is reading back into the Pasuk again. It's almost like a feature of Eretz. Right, but you know that's part of the style of the Arachayim as well, to be able to find Ramadan in the Pasuk, you know, to ideas which clearly are not related to the Pasuk of Shat on any level, you know, here in the Pasuk.
Why not
to
yourself?
Why describe this kind of incredible? Well, yeah. So first of all, I think Sarah is the first one whose death is described at length in the Torah, right? Also, Sarah's death is what really leads the Torah to speak about the Ma'arav HaMachpeva. And perhaps, again, I'm not sure, but perhaps the Arachayim is telling us that you should realize the Ma'arav HaMachpeva's sanctity and Kedusha derives in part from the fact that it houses people who live their lives this way and whose bodies themselves are still kind of repositories of Kedusha, even though they've been long gone from this world. Right? So, you know, the ultimate tether, I mean, the ultimate seal that a person, that we have in Jewish life is the Ma'arav HaMachpeva. you have Kibbe Tzadikim of plenty, but I mean the ultimate Kibbe Tzadikim, I think, is the Maharaj Machpelah. I mean, you know, you talk about the ultimate Kibbe, you know, that from the beginning of time, you know, occupied such an important role. It's the Maharaj Machpelah, and the Sarah as the first person in Chumash to be mentioned, to be buried in the Maharaj Machpelah, like an Adam and Chavra, not mentioned in Chumash in that connection. But Sarah is the first one mentioned in Chumash in connection with the Maharaj Machpelah, underscores for us what the depth of the tzaddik is all about and what we should appreciate when we go to be mispalel, you know, by the Maharaj Machpelah. So perhaps that's why Davka by Sarah, you know, this whole idea is put out. I promised you three things tonight. First, you know, an hashkafa from the Aruch Chaim, and then drush from the Aruch Chaim, and then halacha from the Aruch Chaim. Right? So now I think I tried to deliver on one and two. You know, let me try to deliver on three. Right? So there's, if you turn a little bit further in the Aruch Chaim, on page Kuf Chof towards the bottom, where it says Yutes Chof, the Achari Chaim, and Parakof Gil, Pasuk Yutes. So, Parakhov Gimel describes the handling, so to speak, between Avraham Avinu and Ephraim in buying the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. So, let's read a couple of psukim together. So, Parakhov Gimel Pasuk Yitzayin, Vayakom Stei Ephraim Asher Machpelah, right? Avraham Avinu has just paid the money to Ephraim. So it says, by Yaakov, stay Ephraim, Asher Machpelah, Asher Utei Mamre, Hatzodeh, Vamahar, Asher Gor, V'chol Eifer, Asher Vatzodeh, Asher V'chol Gevulo, Tzodi, V'Avram, V'Nikno, V'Enei Bnei Chais, V'chol Boi Shar Ira. Right, so now, the ownership of the field of Ephraim, and the field, the cave, the trees, everything, the ownership of all of this was transferred to Avram Avinu, right, in the presence of all of the Bnei Chais. Good. So then Avram, after having bought the rights to the field, he now goes and buries his wife Sarah in Ma'arat HaMachpelah. And then Chof, Vayakom HaTzodeh VaMa'arat Shebolei Avram Achuz HaTzodeh Me'etz B'nei Ches. So now the field and the cave in it were transferred to the ownership of Avram Avinu, as a place in which he would bury as a grave, and it was transferred to him by the Bnei Chais. Pasuk Chof seems to be entirely extraneous. Right? I mean, you have three statements here in the Parsha. Right? The ownership was transferred to Avraham Avinu, he then buried Sarah there, and then the ownership was transferred to Avraham Avinu. Right? What's that made Pasuk Chof? What's it doing? I mean, it seems to just be repeating the same idea which was already expressed in Sukkim Yud-Zayin and Yud-Chet. Right? So what's being added over here?
Something
being buried there that confers that the Okay. Yeah, so let's take a look. Sarach lo das, loma hutzrach loma v'acharechein, first of all, even before we get to Pasuk Chof, there's the Aruch Chaim. The Pasuk in Pasuk Yutet, where it says, after buying the field, Avraham Avinu buried Sarah, in a sense, that's also extraneous, because, yeah, obviously, I mean, he wasn't buying it, you know, like to open a kiosk. I mean, he was buying it as a caver. It's clear from the whole discussion. So once he buys it, why does the Torah have to tell us that he then buried Sarah there? Okay, we got that. We understood that. But number two, Od Lama Hutzrak Lama Pam Shein, it's Vayakom HaTzodeh. Right? So then, again, why do we have to repeat? Why does the Torah have to repeat the idea that the ownership of the Tzodeh, that the ownership of the field was transferred to Avraham Avinu? Okay, I call to Yechavei Lahodiyah. The purpose of this pasuk of these Tzodeh is to tell us as follows. Ki Hoitza Akniyah, to call Mishpatei Akinyan. This transaction was carried out in accordance with what would be accepted as halacha later on. Right? Now, this, you could open up a Shulchan Aruch Hoshin Mishpat, and this transaction between Avraham Avinu and Ephron was conducted entirely in accordance with what it says in Shulchan Aruch. And let me explain, says the Aruch Hayim. Pirush. The nimsu nechazdim elu kinechzei midbar shekol amachzik lohem zacha. When describing a transaction between a Jew and a non-Jew, which is what's going on over here again, let's assume, the Arachan seems to be assuming Avraham Avinu has the halachic status of a Jew, which is not quite entirely clear halachically, but you know, let's assume that for these purposes. So, the Rambam writes that when a Jew and a non-Jew are having a transaction, there's actually a little, there's this brief period of time from the time that the money is delivered from the Jew to the non-Jew till the shtar or the other element of kinyan is transferred, there is a brief period of time where the item is actually ownerless, where the non-Jew has relinquished his ownership, but the Jew has not yet brought it into his own ownership. There is such a window in halacha. Hare Basically, according to the Rambam Hilchos Zechiyah Matana, the way a Jew would acquire land from a non-Jew would have to be as follows. The Jew would first give the money to the non-Jew. Now, by accepting the money, the non-Jew essentially releases whatever claim he has on the land. The land is now ownerless. So now, what's left is for the Jew to do a ma'aseh hazaka, an act of acquisition, which shows that he now takes this ownerless land and makes it his. So then it's very important that it be in that order, that the non-Jew first relinquish, and then the Jew do a ma'aseh hazaka. So in this particular case, again, as David pointed out a moment ago, I'll mention your name again, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. As David Richmond pointed out a moment ago, you're a lady? No, okay. David Richmond, how you feel, pointed out a moment ago. What's that? For royalties, yeah, 100%. As David pointed out a moment ago, apparently the burying of sorrow plays a role in the acquisition of the field. That's what seems to come out from the Tzukim. Right? So Avraham Avinu first gives the money, that enables Ephraim to relinquish his claim on the land. But then there has to be an act of chazaka, you know, an act which Avraham Avinu does in order to acquire the land. The burial itself is the acquisition. Because he does something, you know, he makes use of the land, and that act is what actually transfers fully the field to his ownership. Right? So, that's the way to read the Pesukim. Again, if you read it very carefully, so Tet Zayim, Aishkol Avraham LeEfraim and Taketes. Ephraim gives the money to Avraham gives the money to Ephraim. Then Yud Zayim, Vayokom Stei Ephraim Asher B'Machpela LeAvraham LeMikna. So now the field was released. The field of Ephraim was released as an acquisition for Avraham. Avraham Avinu hasn't fully acquired it yet, but Vayokom, it's been released. You know, that it can be acquired by Avraham. The Acharechem called Avraham as Sarah Ishto. And then Avraham went and he buried Sarah. And finally, Chok, by Yochum HaSodim Amar HaShogol Avraham, Bakuzat Kolcher. Finally, the act of burying Sarah creates the full transfer of ownership to Avraham Avinu. It's not just that it's been relinquished by Ephraim, it's actually been acquired by Avraham. So in other words, the steps that are laid out in the Pesuk very painstakingly, you know, the Pesuk is not just being repetitive, the Pesuk is describing how the Mishpatei HaKinyanim, the laws of acquisition, are in full play right here in the Pesukim. Right? This is a very detailed legal document, you know, which is describing all of the legalities, you know, back and forth between Avraham and Ephraim. Yeah. But so there, Chazaka itself would create the acquisition. I mean, the difficulty comes in. This is the difficulty that we encounter by making a promise. You know, it's not quite clear what makes transfer of ownership happen between a Jew and a non-Jew. That's what the Rambam is writing. You know, because of the oddities of, you know, that Jews and non-Jews have different laws when it comes to Mishnah Be'ah Kinyanim, you have this strange situation where the Jew, you know, where the non-Jew releases ownership between the Jew before the Jew acquires it. Between two Jews, Chazaka or Kesef or Shtar for that matter would be enough to acquire Sharka. You wouldn't have this kind of like delayed reaction sort of thing that you have between a Jew and a non-Jew. Okay, that's interestingly enough in its own right, but there's more. Right? So says the Arachayim, next paragraph. The initial adapt is Chazaka Zo Shlo Chazaka B'Karka Hagon. Right? But let's continue to analyze this idea of Chazaka. What's called Chazaka? I think Chazaka is an act done by the new owner of the land to indicate his ownership. What's called Chazaka in Halacha? It ain't called the Rambam that they built the Tuchio Matana. So the Rambam in Tuchio Matana writes as follows. A person can be helping himself, you know, let's say you have a field which is an abandoned field. And every morning I come over to this abandoned field and there are peach trees growing there and I pick a couple of peaches and eat them. That act, even though you might say that demonstrates ownership, that act is not sufficient. The fact that I go in and just pluck peaches off of these hefker trees doesn't make the land my own. There has to be some kind of more substantial act which is done that relates to the karka itself, to the land itself, in order to be considered a chazaka. That's what Amo goes on to write. You have to do a maisa de gut ha'aret, keisa. Hamotei palter in the mitzvah agero hefker. If you find, let's say again, an abandoned field, and there's an abandoned house in this abandoned field, the CA, the Bohem, Okir, Gavoa, Alma, O Yosef, and you make some kind of repair to the house, you plaster, or something like that to the house, you know, the house hasn't been touched in 50 years, so you go and you replaster it, you paint it or something. Kono. So that's a nice occasion, that's a chazaka. Because the house is mechubah lakarka, it's attached to the ground. You're doing something, you know, to something which is attached to the ground itself. You're not just picking fruit off of the tree. You're doing something to the ground itself, but that which is permanently attached to it. I'm sorry?
The fruit is attached to the tree, which is attached to the
right, but that's too indirect already. In other words, you know, if you would, you have to do something that's more directly, you know, connected to the ground.
You're talking about the tree itself.
Yeah, for the tree itself, that would be sufficient. Right? But Hamatsia Matzot Kama. The Rambam says another example, if you put down mats on the ground, that would also be a way of acquiring the ground. We'll see why in a few moments. It's going to be very significant. Right? Or, so it's similarly, if you're taking, if you're painstakingly moving earth from one place to another, that's also called, you know, doing something with the land, but that would be a kinyan chazaka. We know shahari mashne ba'afir lo atzada, right? The first question of mechavim ma'ashu samaka v'dayish v'lo kana. But if you're just throwing around the earth haphazardly, then that's not a kinyan chazaka. Basically, yeah. The cost of a Magid Mishnah. Magid Mishnah, one of the chief commentaries in the Rambam writes as follows. Why is it that matziah matzot, why is it that putting down mats creates a kinyan? So he said, well, Pirush Leishev Aleah, where Amen and the Gupakaka. One interpretation is that when you put mats on the ground, your intention is to sit on them, you know, it's like a picnic blanket or something like that. And by sitting on them, or by getting ready to sit on them, you're deriving Hana from the, you know, deriving benefit from the ground itself. Okay? So, you know, you're deriving something, you're showing your ownership of the ground, you know, so that's, you know, that's considered to be a Kiddush Chazak. Pirish Achia, or second interpretation. He see our matzah sheyipo hakarka b'hatzaos of the seer of the tiyur. Maybe a different explanation. Maybe putting down the mat is the equivalent of beautifying the land. Not that you're going to sit on the mat, but if you're putting down the mat, as a kind of aesthetic thing. You don't want it to be dirty. You're putting these colorful mats to enhance the aesthetic quality of the ground. And by doing that, that's the equivalent of painting the house, which we also know is a form of chazaka. And the Rimigash, the Rebbe of the Rambam's father, felt that that was the correct shot. Okay. So what did all this have to do? Well, there's certain things that you can do that are king of chazaka, which are not necessarily chilul Shabbos in other contexts. But also, one of the ways you can make a king of chazaka is just by locking the gate that goes around an abandoned property. Right? So, I mean, no one suggests that locking a gate on Shabbos would be...
Yeah.
Okay. Right, but that's not because it's always up to beautify something, as you can
see. Well,
that's because most of our opinion of anything you do which adds to the permanent wall. No, I don't think so. I think this is just this is how you show ownership. I'm showing ownership by doing something to improve the karka directly. Right? So this is aesthetically improving the karka. Right? I don't think so, because I don't think that the word's in aesthetically improving. That's just physically adding something. In other words, if you could somehow beautify the wall without adding anything onto it. I mean, let's say you don't staple something to the wall or nail something to the wall. I take a beautiful mat and I hang it up against the wall, just hold it there for the duration of Shabbos. So there's no chilul Shabbos involved in that. I can beautify the wall, so that I'm not adding anything permanent onto it in terms of Shabbos. Right? So, I think it's just a different set of gevurah. What does that have to do with us? We make the shlomo l'pirush rishon shal magid shekol shenena miguf hakarka nikrit chazaka. According to the first chapter of the Magid Mishnah, any time you get any benefit from the ground, that's called making a chazaka. So the b'siyas l'fanenu kivan shekava miguf hakarka sara ishtol chashut nena miguf haaretz uknaa. So how did Avraham Avinu acquire the field from Esau? He buried sara there. One of the greatest benefits you can get from the ground is to use it as a burial plot. So the etzem, the very fact that he buried her, was the form of chazaka. Elo, as far as Rabbi the Migash, but according to the second shot of the Rimigash, Shena chazaka zulat miyaseh tikkun b'gufa or kisiyut b'kiyur. According to the Rimigash, deriving benefit from the ground alone is not considered to be a chazaka. You have to somehow beautify the ground, to improve the quality of the ground. In Cain, Kurasar, Loto, Rinus Hazokahu, Mekhan Avram. So then, you wouldn't call burial an improvement in the quality of the ground. I'm getting usage out of the ground. I'm getting benefit out of the ground. I'm not improving the quality of the ground. The quality of the ground isn't any better because I dug a grave there and buried somebody there. So we're back to stage one. According to the Rimigash, how did Avram Avinu acquire the field from Ephraim? Right? Again. Okay, so that's a nice shot actually, but he said something different again. David wants to suggest because of the quality of Sarah Imenu, right? That he improved the ground in that way. But it's a nice shot. I have a different shot. It says as follows: To Esha, kikishabon in hakeder v'prat din hakvaras hakdumin shayubon in kuchin min hastam hayu mesaidim mechayrim. Right? So he said, well, in the good old days when they made a caver, they didn't just, dig a hole in the ground, put the person in, that's done. Right? They would plaster and do different things. I maybe put a, he doesn't say it exactly, but I guess maybe the masefa they put over it. There would be some aesthetic addition to the ground, and that was really the Maisa Kinyan, that which acquired the land. So וזו הזה הגם שבערך איפה נחתם הגבילות ושסיעו לתחוצה, אבל עדיין אין ריקו של אברהם כפיעדים כריבקה ואחר שקודה וגומר ויוקב. That's why the Pope comes back a second time and says, after the burial, either because the burial itself or because of whatever plastering or whatever Avraham Avinu did in order to improve the karka with the burial of Sarah, that's what really, you know, created or finished off the kinyan. Hence, everything has to be told to us in stages. The Torah is halakhically accurate, down to the very details, even in describing, you know, what just seems to be a simple transaction. It's told with incredible exactness, you know, to reflect the halakhas, which would be codified much later on. And again, this is a different style from the Archaim than what we've encountered up till now, with the Archaim, again, is analyzing Chumash halakhically, right, something which would become famous later on with Svarim like the Kuchenda, you know, and the Biskarov comments on Chumash, you know, where non-halakhic portions of Chumash are analyzed from a halakhic point of view. But again, I think what we've seen tonight is a whole varying different types of style that the Arachayim has, you know, Pshat, Drash, Remez, Halacha, you know, everything is coming together. You know, he was able to analyze Chumash in many, many different ways, all of them in a beautiful fashion.
So, the difference between buying from something from the blind, buying something from the Jew. If I buy something from the Jew, I can go directly to the Hadaka.
Right.
And then I require it.
Right. Here, there's the delay.
Because the guy actually first relinquished his ownership.
Right, exactly.
So if I have two kinyanim, first I'm giving him the chapter, which would promote,
right.
That would itself be a kinyan, right?
Right, but between two Jews that are alone, we were kidding. Here, the kidding happens in two stages, which is interesting.
Is there a reason for that? I mean, there should be a reason.
I'm sure, yeah. I think just the Mishpat Akinyonim work differently, so, you know, when you have the intersection of Jew and non-Jew, you know, you're putting two different waves of Kinyonim together, and they have, that's the result
you
have.
Have more to say.
So I guess you could call it that, yeah. Okay, that's actually we'll pick up next week with Pastor Talbot, and we'll see you then. Have a chance.